We have a new show at Turpentine that's been in the works for a long time, Company Breakdowns. We dive into S1s and Series B and beyond companies, interviewing founders and investors to break down the companies. First episode is on Rubrik, which IPO'd this week. Upcoming episodes cover Reddit, Databricks, and more. Subscribe at the link in the description or search for Company Breakdowns on YouTube or in the podcast platform of your choice. Request for Startups is a show with tech insiders about products and companies that should exist but haven't yet. Listen first, then build. Justin, Sean, welcome to Request for Startups.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so to be here.
So guys, there's a lot we want to get to, but first, a little bit of background. Justin, you've incubated a number of companies. It's almost unfair how many companies you've incubated. It feels like we're in high school and you have other people doing your homework for you in like four different classes. What is your, talk about how you think about your incubation processes in terms of like, what were the idea generation and how you find people to run them. Share your secrets with us.
Yeah, so I think that a couple of things. I have pretty much only incubated companies in a space that I either understand very well, which is, I think, like health, wellness, food supplement space, or incubated companies in areas where I've directly experienced the problem. So like lending to consumer brands, stuff like that. And so I think really like where it comes from is just me having a desire to like solve my own problems or see things exist in the world that I think should exist. And in some cases, it turns out that other people seem to want those things as well. And so that's really been it. And then I think I've also been very fortunate to have a lot of smart people kind of around me in my extended network. And when a smart person gets the opportunity to like if I can de-risk a business, test it, validate it, have a good idea, be willing to fund it, be willing to like find someone and say like, hey, if you go from making 150K over here to making like 100K over here with 50 times more equity, I think it's like kind of a compelling offer oftentimes. So have just recruited people solely through my network.
Totally. And knowing you, if you focus just on your problems, I mean, you have so many problems. So it
so feels many. Like it's
grief building.
You'll notice I've done nothing penile related though. So
yeah, HIMS was taken. Sean, why don't you talk about how you've thought about the idea generation process when you were on deck, so, you know, in between things.
Yeah, the framework that I have always followed is to first start with, like Justin said, the things that you know, the things that you feel, the problems that you have. But the real litmus test for me is about being able to get somebody else super insanely excited about the project. You know, a lot of people talk about, is the market big enough? Is the customers there? All of that's important, but if you can't even get, you know, one person to just get like really lit up, I mean, me and Justin do this with each other, just sort of send each other walls of messages of, you know, getting really excited about ideas. And you know, that's kind of that first stage is like, does somebody else like eyes light up and brain get super turned on by this idea? Because if you can't do that, then you're not going to be able to attract employees. You're not gonna be able to attract investment. You're not gonna be able to sort of sustain that energy. I think the it's a very rare person who can sort of go at it alone. So yeah, that sort of for me always starts with those conversations. And once you sort of have that deep sort of community around you, sort of 3, 4, or 5 people that are like really stoked on an idea, then you have the energy and the momentum to take to the next level of doing the real customer validation, throwing up websites, you know, actually testing the idea in the flesh.
That's a great segue, Sean. Let's jump into our Request for Startups. We have a number of ideas we want to get through. And Justin, let's first focus on you and solving personal problems. The dating app. Why don't you speak to that idea?
Yeah. So I have for a long time thought that building a dating app based on how someone spent, like their spending patterns, would be an amazing way to filter people from a dating standpoint. Like there's this whole idea of like it's a implicit versus revealed preference, I believe. And it's this kind of thing of like, you know, you say like, oh yeah, when after work I go home and I like work out, when in reality you just like binge watch some horrible trash TV. I think that like what with the dating app thing is like the classic one is like guys are 6'6", you know, or whatever. And then you show up and they're like 5'11", 5'10", whatever. I think that if you were able to be like, hey, log in, we use Plaid, we suck all of your credit card transactions out of your, you know, using Plaid out of whatever account you use. And we can actually see like, how do you express your values? What are you spending money on? And that is probably a better indicator of the type of person that you are and the things that you care about than literally anything that you could punch into like a dating app interface.
This is a fast track to FinDom as a service. That's where we're going with this.
Great. I'm here for it. Some people aren't aware of it.
Say that one more time, Eric.
Some people aren't aware of FinDom. So on you, I know you're really
not everyone knows it as well.
Yeah, Eric is the real guy here, but I'll stand in for him. You know, it's a very internet only seeming thing where the whole it's a fetish where the whole relationship is basically somebody dominating your finances, taking your money, and that somehow is erotic for a limited subset of the population.
I can't imagine.
Everyone who lives in San Francisco.
Okay, so Justin, so the idea is I would put my credit card data, and then what? How does it work?
Like, I think that, for example, I would be vastly more likely to get along with someone who had like really high Whole Foods expenses, and then like was spending at a yoga studio or like something like that that indicates health. You know, like you would probably get along with a bunch of women who have a high spend on OnlyFans or something like that. Sean, I have no idea. Like maybe if someone had a GitHub Pro account or something like that, you'd be like, yeah, like really likely to get along with them. But I think it would be an amazing way to match people. Exactly. Yeah. I just think it would be a way better way to match people than like when I was single in Austin briefly. Like you just swipe through woman after woman who thinks that like liking tacos is a personality trait, and it's just horrible.
Yeah, I've long thought you could build a social network just based on receipts because it you know it shows what musicians you like, what events you go to, what books you buy. I mean, there's just so much there more broadly around connecting people. So dating is an interesting one.
I mean, I'm just thinking about what would that user interface look like? Like, can I scroll through the whole list? Like, how much are you spending where? Like, I'm real curious. It's a good vector for manufacturing serendipity. You know, it's like, oh, I see that you're at like, you know, Cholita Linda in Oakland, like, you know, every other day, I'm just going to show up.
Exactly.
That might be a safety concern as well. But at the same time, you know.
This is what Venmo could have been, right? Or like the social feed on Venmo could have been something.
You guys have never picked up a date off of the Venmo social feed? I thought everyone did that.
I have long thought that you could probably just like Venmo random people like a dollar and have hyper-targeted ads for shit just by being like, hey, check out exec.com or something. And you like Venmo Reid Hoffman $4. He definitely gets that notification. You know what I mean?
I mean, for a while there, I was literally sending people really sort of esoteric poems and one penny on Venmo and just giving them a penny for my thoughts.
That's amazing.
Just strangers, nobody prominent, just random people. Turns out you're allowed to do that.
What I like about that idea also is women want to date men who have money. And men want to show that they have money in a subtle way without being like obnoxious about it. And so maybe this could be a way to do that.
I'd love for you to double click on that. Take it one layer deeper.
I have a few dating ideas. One is Yenta. Basically, like we all have, I don't know if this is a startup, but this is just a cool product. We all have single friends who are men or women who are awesome, who it's like a matching, it's basically a palette for dating. Like if you had a profile of the single women you know, and maybe they're anonymous or something, or they're public if they want to, and men. And then I could be like, oh, I'm friends with Justin. Like I want to see who he thinks is great. And if it's a mutual swipe right, you make the intro. But it feels like we all have beautiful friends who we know that we have other beautiful friends, and it's just too much work for us to like go through our entire networks to feel like to see who's single and to keep track of whose relationship is in the shitter and stuff. And so I feel like that is a product. Should it, just like, how do you productize Yentas?
I feel like there were so many things that Facebook previously did before it just imploded in a weird sort of social network for Gen Zs or Gen Xers and boomers. But this feels like this was like the college era, Facebook experience. We've got to, bring that back. You know, whatever Partyful is doing for the events section of Facebook, we need the singles version.
Totally.
Interesting. I wonder, I feel like the problem though is that I don't want to be, if I don't know you, let's say I have some cool person sort of on the periphery of my network who is attractive and cool, but I don't like know him or her that well. I like kind of don't want to intro that person to anyone in case I think they're awful, even though the odds, just because it'll blow back on me, even though the odds are that that person is a way better match than like the average person that you would meet on a Hinge or a Bumble or something like that. So I wonder how you could solve the personal responsibility aspect of that, if that makes sense. Like you almost want the network, but don't want to like be responsible for being a node that where a connection like doesn't work out super well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Then you don't want asymmetric downside of, you want the credit if it works out, but not the blame if it doesn't.
I don't even care that much about the credit though. Like if two of my friends get together, it's like, I don't know. I have Totally. Like
I don't care about the credit.
It's like,
either.
Okay, I'm Garrett is, I will not see you as much. Like, annoying.
I don't care about the credit either. Like I introduce you guys are good friends, but like who cares? Like I don't
Yeah, who's keeping track? No one's keeping track.
The other dating idea relates to yours. So basically, okay, Sean just mentioned this in My First Million. I'm going to build off it. It's basically Raya, but even more elite, where the guys pay $25,000. He even said $100,000 to be on the app. And so the idea is that you would, gate it so that only fairly affluent people could join, men could join. Men would signal that they're serious about relationships because you're not going to pay that much money just to screw around. Although you might.
Yeah. Bottle service in Vegas exists, man.
That's true. But it filters out for some level of seriousness, for some level of wealth. And it, women like guys that pay for them. So it's just a more curated elite experience. And here's my angle, or my build on it, is the $25,000 or $10,000 that the guy invests or that the guy spends, it's an angel investment in the company. So every user angel invest in the company
at whatever valuation the founders set at that moment.
This is all secondary, no primary.
It's an uncapped note.
Exactly. And it's meant, so now the men are like high status, they're angel investing. It's not like they're, losers paying money for the dates, but they're angel investing. Now, here's the real idea. You make it a DAO.
Oh no.
So everyone's got ownership in the thing, and it when they're incentivized to share it around. Anyways, I was thinking the app could be called Gold Digger with no vowels.
let's get Dan Bilzerian to found it. I mean, he's the real guy he's like the perfect spokesman for this app.
I was thinking it could be called 1,000 Great Men, because all you need is 1,000, men paying 20, then you're at 250 million.
It's like a couple fish is what we're going to call it.
And it's meta commentary too. It's only, So I'm guessing that you guys don't think this is a good idea.
I mean, you have a significant adverse selection issue here.
Adverse selection in what way? Good men won't pay?
Yes. Well, I think plenty of good
Rise
men
is successful, right?
Yeah, I think plenty of guys that sort of got that had a monomaniacal focus on career earlier in their lives and now are like, okay, I want to get this done fast. Like, let's just pay whatever amount of money it takes. I think that they'll do it, but I'm not sure that the supply on the other side is going to be the type of person that a lot of sort of very successful guys want. Maybe it's exactly what they want. Maybe it's like 24-year-old Instagram models. But
agreed. So can I tell you what I actually was in the process of doing before getting back with my now wife? We'd broken up. I think I've told you this, Sean.
I just remembered this one.
But basically, I had hired a VA in the Philippines to create like a skin front end that was like Austin's most eligible entrepreneur executive pool. And I was just going to have her message a bunch of women that like looked like they were professional and smart, whatever, on LinkedIn, and be like, hey, we noticed that you're awesome. Do you want to join this like super selective pool of like women and stuff that we're pulling together here? And all of those would funnel back just to me. And so for like $8 an hour, I was just going to build this like double opt-in sort of network. And then design, you know, got back together with a better person. But, you know, it was, I was pretty stoked about it for a while.
So the hook for them was like female founder camaraderie, but actually...
No, not female founder. Just like, hey, do you want to like date men in Austin that are like founders, executives, like people doing cool things that are, you know, above X, Y, and Z criteria and, you know, in broth. And so, yeah, that was
cool. And but it's just... Yep? But it's just
I didn't. I scoped out the page. What'd you say?
I was saying, but it's just you. I mean, it's the most genius coup. It's like the marketing is like concierge one-on-one matching, and the only concierge one-on-one match that always happens is to this eligible man, Justin Mares. It's incredible.
Exactly. Well, this is you have and match. I was so close.
I'll have to get your landing page afterwards for this this company.
Yeah, someone should do this. I think like a dating as a service or like dating recruiting as a service would be quite like you can hire executive recruiters to hire you an executive. You can hire no one to like get you a matchmaker from like an outbound hunting standpoint, which yeah. feels maybe like a weird thing. Like maybe that should exist.
I've thought about it this way, like you can get a personal trainer and you will get fit. Like if you just listen to everything they say and they will watch you and make sure you do it, you will get fit. If you want a girlfriend, what is the button that you can press? The person that you could call who will watch you, give you a plan and watch you like a few times a week and make sure that you get a girlfriend. Or if you want to get in a better relationship or you want to end your relationship, whatever, like whatever.
And the relationship's easy.
It's hard to break up.
No, these people exist. I mean, so for exec, you know, we have coaches, and so we've interviewed tons and tons of coaches. And no, it's relevant. I swear, it's relevant. But our coaches are like leadership coaches and job search coaches. But on more than one occasion, we've interviewed people who are like, oh, how'd you get your start in this career? And they're like, well, like I got tapped at a bar. You know, I was talking to this girl and this guy walked up to me and was like, wow, like you're really good at talking to girls. Like you ever consider doing that for a living? And there's guys that like just like sort of they're like wingmen as a service. They literally like they're guys that have read the game, that they've mastered all the techniques, and they will just come with you and like help you pick up girls. I don't know the names of the services or anything, but I'm sure that you probably can find it after this recording.
I would love to see that. They like ramp up the charisma and then like ramp down super hard so that you're the one that like ends up meeting these women at bars. This must be so awkward.
I mean, it was crazy because in the interview process for some of these guys, it was like this is totally inappropriate, but like every girl that interviewed him was like, you know, like we got to hire this guy, strong hire, strong hire, strong hire. And every guy was like, I'm not so sure. It's like, it's working.
That's amazing. Can I tell you another idea that I had around dating? So the idea of like the personal trainer that you pay to like, and it's their job to make you more fit. I thought that it would be, this is back when like Grouper was a thing, but I thought it would be super fun to do a dating event where you did speed dating and had like 30, 60 people, whatever, matched everyone up. But the thing was you did a speed date and then everyone wrote feedback about like what you should improve for when you go on real dates. And so you'd walk out of there having done like a speed date round and then have feedback from every woman, probably anonymously, that you went on a date with of like, this story sucked. You were slightly racist. You were like wearing a MAGA hat, like whatever it is, you know, and have that to take with you so that you can like moderate your dating approach. I think it'd be kind of fun.
Dude, we could do this with ChatGPT's API. So I think we take guys that are good at dating and just consume their entire text message history and just do a little bit of fine tuning on their text
message
history.
That's a great idea.
And then
not where
like,
I thought you were going with that.
If you're lame at text messaging, you're like, this girl just said this, what should I say? And it's like, you know, you just spit out a RLHF network answer from somebody who's good at texting.
That's the South Park episode. I don't know if you saw that. But
no, I haven't seen this.
Is
that thing?
Is it?
That's so funny.
Yeah, he's like, what should I say to my girlfriend? And ChatGPT.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but you can't actually, you can't ask natural ChatGPT because it's going to come up with like, hello, compatible partner.
Always
I am
be
so
nice.
Thrilled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's an incredible idea, actually.
Yeah.
Totally doable.
Yeah. There's a company that does it called Relationship Hero, but they don't do it to the extent that they do it manually, I think. But yeah, there's a opportunity.
Oh, that's right. But they do it all text message based. So they have a sick training set. So yeah. Long as their relationship heroes are actually, you know, good at their job. I don't know what the outcome is.
How good were they when you worked with them there?
Hey, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. So the personal trainer for life idea more broadly, I'm excited about. Basically, you put it in another conversation of like, how do I make my goals someone else's job? And like, not just to help you define it, but just to help you do it. Like the obvious things are you're tracking what you're eating, making sure you're exercising, you know, make sure you're sleeping and just like scheduling it in, but then all your other goals as well. Like even when you're like watching your text messages, if you're like being short with someone, being like, stop doing that. You know, it's just like the amount of, if we have someone watching us at all times and with AI, we can, like how can we avoid making dumb mistakes and just be like way smarter, better with people, et cetera, if we just had more like accountability, help, advice, like at the right time.
Yeah, it's like
as funny as people used to think. Yeah, yeah, people used to call that person God, and now that you're like people are religious, it's like, well, maybe the AI can tell me how to be a better person. I hope so.
Yeah, in AI we trust.
There's this like concept of learning in the flow of work, and learning in the flow of work is how you do your best learning. It's like you have a real problem right now. And then there's sort of direct in the moment interventions where you're learning the skills that you need. And those actually stick much better than sort of academic textbook based learning. And I'm really excited just for that to sort of permeate everything, right? Like at one level, it can be degenerative, right? If you use Copilot too much, you start to lose your skills because you're relying on it. Yeah. But if you're getting sort of interventive feedback as opposed to it doing it for you, I think that we all will grow a lot faster. It's like your slope will increase. It has to.
Yeah, totally. And the other idea related to what you're talking about, Justin, is like 360s as a service. Like you mentioned the grouper, but like, what if, you know, instead of asking strangers, you ask like all my friends, you know, and all people I work with and past girlfriends, would it just like go deep and have people say like, Eric, you smell like you're not good in bed. Like you, you know, you're whatever, inappropriate. Like basically like we don't really understand what our reputations are within our ecosystem. Like if you can get granular, like that's so valuable.
I have a friend who did this. He paid someone like 10 grand, I think, to do a full 360 of like everyone he worked with, his family, his friends, his girlfriend, all this sort of stuff. And like, built this image of what he was like. And he said it was incredibly useful feedback, like maybe a little hard to hear at parts, but incredibly useful. I did this like 6 years ago informally and asked a bunch of friends, and it was really useful.
Yeah. That relates to my reference checks as a service idea. Like I could imagine offering that as a product, taking that data and then selling it to other people. I'm just kidding.
Here is your best attack vector to decimate this guy. Just, you know, abuse his shortcomings.
Yeah. but seriously, the idea of what I think it would be hard with 360s, unless it's like positive that they want to contribute it to it, to the what their reference score more broadly or reputation score. But if you have this like vague idea that you offer reference checks as a service, you do references on a bunch of people, you now can resell that data to other people, have just like the best data set on people. And anytime someone wants to invest in them, hire them, work with them in some capacity, you could sell that data and keep building upon that data. Sean, you didn't like that idea, I think, because you didn't feel confident that it was like a great business. Say more about that.
You know, I do think that it could be a pretty good business. I think the motivating use case here that would get people to open up their wallets and repeat would be selling it to HR. And I think so you want to sell to HR. I think the trick is you have to have the right sort of protocol around the whole thing, right? Like there's laws around background checks and how those work, and those result in sort of a healthy society. I think the other part about it is you just have to get somebody to pay quite a lot of money, because to do those references, you basically have the following problem. The references themselves are somewhat costly to get, because if you want to do off the record or sort of off paper references, you have to go figure out who possibly are we going to actually get to do this reference, which itself is a challenging task. It's not like, oh, you know, follow this algorithm or this checklist. You actually have to do the work. That's challenging and costly. And then you have to do the interviews. And then the liquidity of demand for that data is pretty low, right? At any given time, you know, maybe two people during a job search are going to do a reference check on you, if maybe just one. It's just not that many people. And then that data becomes stale after a time. And, you know, there's other sort of higher liquidity people. Like I think you are a high liquidity person. Maybe like you're talking to a lot of founders. A lot of founders want to reference check you. With that said, then you're kind of like a service review marketplace. And also you're kind of the super customer there. And so there's also some weird incentive problems. I feel like as long as you get all of your money back all in one fell swoop, you can totally do it, right? Like HR teams pay their own employees to do reference checks all the time. If you're just a slightly more efficient outsourced thing, and you're also just reliable, like you always do them and you always ask good questions and you summarize it, I feel like there's a pretty good opportunity there if there's not already, you know, somebody sort of occupying that space.
Yeah. And maybe it should be attached to something like a recruiting firm or something. Like I'm blown away by how much referencing goes on that is just not captured. Like, you know, obviously by people who are hiring or investing, but even by like a journalist. Like I saw there was this piece on Mark Suster today, and the journalist said that he spoke with like 40 people. Like that's a thorough reference check. Like that information is really valuable, and yet it's just going to stick in that journal. Like, and so if there are ways to almost reuse, if people could contribute that data somehow, anyways.
I think it's cool. I mean, I think it'd be a cool idea. You know, there's obviously a lot of risk. So you sort of got to be a little selective at the top of the funnel of who's getting access to this. It's, you know, it's like alpha sites or whatever, where they do the analyst calls with experts and then make those available. But the difference there is that, you know, they're sharing information about a company. It's not personal. It's not like potential for creep factor.
Totally.
Wait, Eric, what was your dating app idea?
I had two. it was the one that was expensive, like $10,000, $25,000, like Raya Plus.
I thought you heard that on Sean's podcast.
Well, my version of it was make the guys angel investors.
Make it an angel investor.
Oh, I see. Okay, got it.
Or make a DAO. But the idea that you have ownership over the app, and thus you're more likely to give,
got it.
You know, bring in good people. And, you know, angel investments make you rich, like no matter what. You just get...
Of course. That's why everybody does.
$1,000 at a time, baby.
Yeah, totally. I invested $1,000 into Justin's company. And that's not a signal about how I feel about his company. It's a signal about how I feel about our friendship. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Eric put 50% of his net worth into my company.
I was honored.
I was lucky to have the opportunity. Proud investor. Sean, maybe Google Maps for market ontologies, or pick whichever one you're the most excited about.
I think the Google Maps for market ontologies is neat and interesting. I don't know exactly how to pursue it, but the idea here is basically, you know, Google Maps revolutionized our ability to live within the physical world, right? The fact that I was on the beach not that long ago. I was on Manhattan Beach, and I needed to use the bathroom. And I remember being a kid and having the same situation and being like, okay, like where am I going to go? Obviously, there's an ocean, but I was wearing clothes like a normal person dressed in a non-beach outfit. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to look on my phone. And I realized, okay, way over there, there's a bathroom. And you know, there's a million of these moments that we've all experienced. We all just sort of pursue, you know, we sort of explore the world in a really seamless way because we have access to everything. And I was thinking about it with markets, and there's nothing quite like that, but it does seem amenable to being mapped. People create these market maps, and I think they're kind of useless. They're like, you know, 500 logos all sort of smushed together in one sort of like bad box, sort of weak descriptor box. But I was thinking it's possible to condense market information into a sort of XY axis, where X axis is maybe some type of categorical ontology, and then y-axis is market size or profitability or some sort of financial success metric. And then your goal really is just to look around the map and see where are we exploring at the edges? Like, where is there open space? Where are the big pockets of money? And this is a good way for people to choose their careers. Is like, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was, if you're going to, you know, set up a career or a company, you don't want to set up shop next to a tiny little trickling stream, a little babbling brook. You want to set up shop next to a huge, massive roaring river.
A lot of pee metaphors here, man.
Yeah. But the issue is that it's not even easy to find those, you know, roaring rivers. So that was sort of the thought there.
How do you think of it from a business perspective? Like, how would this make money?
Yeah, I think you sell it to investors. I think you sell it to entrepreneurs, people that are sort of exploring. Or it's also a good way to do competitor discovery. You're like, who else lives in this sort of part on the map, right? Yeah. Like, there's OnDeck. Who else is right around OnDeck? You're like, okay, like OnDeck is sort of on its little peak by itself, right? There's nobody else quite like it. Or maybe there's sort of near competitors. And as a founder, your goal then is to sort of, you know, elbow out and make space around yourself and occupy a niche that nobody else can quite get access to.
Yeah. I've been excited about that for a long time. Things basically, like, so many people would go to OnDeck and explore healthcare, and like, what would they do? They would, like, I don't know, try to talk to people who've started companies in the space, try to like reach out to customers, try to talk to investors, but they're kind of like, we're not building on top of each other. So many people explore the idea maze and they don't share their learnings in any way that we could leverage. And that seems like a big shame. And I don't know what is like the point. What's the atomic unit? Like, is it everyone shares their deck? Is it we just get everyone to talk about their experience in a public way? But like, if you want to go explore healthcare, like, good luck. Like, you know, it's pretty hard, right? And so how can we make it so much easier in a way that doesn't require like so much new work to be done by those people, or in a way that benefit, like, really incentivize them to contribute?
Totally. I mean, the way that the way that you do this in a way that works is you just have to get in the game. That's kind of the way that I've always thought about it. It's like you choose a market that you are willing to be a long-term player in, and you do whatever it takes to just get in the game. And then once you're in the game, you can start to really understand the deep nuance that otherwise is impossible as an outsider looking in. Like, a couple, you know, if you're trying to, like, you know, deep dive in healthcare and you've never operated in healthcare, there's just no chance that you're going to be, you know, the person that has the sort of striking insight for some of these deep industries. Like, it's happened in the past, right? Stripe did it with payments, but they built payments for developers. So they actually did have that sort of striking insight there.
And they built an e-commerce thing before where they had to build
That's payments. Right. 100%. They were outsiders in the payment processing industry, but they were, you know, deep, you know, users of their own product.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's smart. I mean, the best career advice I ever got was, speaking to your flowing river, Sean, is someone basically said, go, like, find the industry where the dumbest people are making the most money and go operate in that industry. And that was, of course, commercial real estate, but it was way too boring, so I couldn't make it good. But good advice for someone to take.
More broadly, to your idea, Sean, like, if we were to go to Wikipedia and for any like subject or topic and compare what's written up there with an expert's understanding of it, my sense is that the expert will know more, would produce a better write-up like most of the time. And so why isn't there a Wikipedia just by expert? Like, people who are experts want to be, you know, seen as experts in the space. They would want to get that credit, that like notability. And so couldn't there be, you know, a Wikipedia that was actually done by experts that like made sense? Feels like a, what do you think?
I think Golden is trying to do something similar to that, but you do tend to have the issue where, you know, you have a tragedy of the commons and a sort of devolution into marketing that everything suffers from. The fact that Wikipedia sort of caters to, you know, I might, this might need to get cut, but, you know, caters to people that are on the spectrum and write.
Bro, I said Jew joke earlier, man. You keep spectrum.
You know, yeah,
not
you
got, the hard S word, Sean.
I don't know. Like, Wikipedia is catering basically to autists who are writing in like this super cold style, which lends itself to truth, but doesn't lend itself necessarily. You know, it's the type of topics that those types of folks are good at conquering and mastering.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like generalist, like, could you appeal to experts, get their contributions in a better way? I mean, related to that is like us three on this call have expertise in some areas that if someone would pay us enough money, we might have like an hour call with someone. It's sort of like the GLG, but for everything.
Dude, you know, I think the big opportunity here, right, is like, how do you know? Yeah. Classic. You know, I think the big opportunity classic here Eric. Is...
everyone's got a price.
So the AI knows everything that was said sort of privately or this knows everything that was said publicly. It has the sort of average information. It has a little bit of laggy information. But if you want to have, it would be really cool to have a sort of like automated collection experience in the loop where the AI is like, you're asking me for knowledge that doesn't exist yet, but there is somebody that can answer that for you. And for it to go and source the, like, do a, you know, an automated call with that person or, you know, text message based conversation with that person, source that information and reincorporate it, that human in the loop process is pretty incredible for harvesting all of that sort of like leaf level or leaf node expertise from the world's greatest experts. And yeah, nobody has quite tackled that. I think GLG is in that direction, but they might be a little susceptible to disruption here because their business is so concierge driven in order to justify their fees that I don't know that they'll ever be able to make that full pivot.
Yeah. And I also mean, even for like Goggin was on the podcast the other day and he was like, he's like doing some things in his household and like gardening, like chores that he had just no idea how to do. And he would just love to talk to and pay like a healthy penny to people who know how to do it. And our service providers and your service workers would love to get paid for it.
Yeah. I mean, like everyone has a sort of a price at which they're willing to have their time, have a call on it. Right. Yep. Like even if you're like Warren Buffett, like if someone's going to pay you $1 billion, you probably take the call. You know,
it's like Cameo, but for expertise or something, or you know, guidance.
Yeah. What do you think the turnaround time necessary to make that work would be? Like if you wanted to do this, how fast would they need to get back to you?
24 hours, maybe. I don't know.
I think it'd be way more interesting if you had people that were domain experts, just film like long tail videos of, and you could just like, well, I guess YouTube exists. Like, doesn't YouTube just solve most of this shit? Like, if I want to figure out how to. True. But that's like solving. The feedback loop.
I think that's the real trick here is like, how does the feedback loop work? Like how do you go? So for example, Google has this in search. They recently added this, maybe recently within the past few years. If you search for something that they don't have a good result for, they're like, hey, we don't have a good result. Like tell us more and we'll send it to our content partners. And so you sort of have this feedback mechanism for harvesting latent demand that hasn't quite been actioned on. And yeah, I don't know how this works in YouTube. I think people just kind of like keep their ears open, but there could be a more formal mechanism to close that loop.
Yeah.
Seems really hard though. Seems like a wildly hard like market liquidity problem to me.
Check out intro.co or you can check it out later, but they're trying to do it for across categories. Like home design, you know, wellness, career, fashion, astrology.
there's actually one of the like secret big marketplaces. There's like a PE roll up of psychics online. They're doing like tens of millions of dollars in revenue of like, you know, your local psychic that will read your palm over Zoom.
I would love to see that pitch deck. It's like, people are still dumb. People are getting dumber. The TAM is exploding.
There's a lot of people out there.
Here's an idea. I'd actually love your guys' thoughts on. Actually, Sean, I've talked with you a little bit about this in the past, but a version of it. Basically, I think that it's like calling it like WeWork for productivity. And what I mean by that is I think that like WeWork is analogous to like a Planet Fitness or some sort of like cheap gym where you pay to access the space and that's it. You get like a desk space, pay to access Planet Fitness, you get access and you can like throw their weights around. But where people make a lot of progress and what you actually want is to get a trainer that will help like make you more fit. And I think that there's an opportunity to build a like co-working space where you have people that are almost like in charge of product managing your productivity and making sure that you're like your most productive possible self at work. And like, that would mean like leave your phone at the front desk, have like hyper oxygenated environment and shit like this, library hours, library rules, like have people putting up their goals on a board of like, this is what I'm going to get done in the next like 3 hours. I basically think that you could make this like pretty fun, hyper productivity oriented co-working space that companies would be so happy to pay for, because it's just like, yeah, I want more productive employees. And if it's, you know, 900 a month instead of 300 a month, then I get space plus this like productive coaching system, shit like this community. Would that be useful? That's my idea. I think
it's like at the turn of the 20th century, we had Taylorism, scientific management for figuring out how to assembly line workers, like what's the most optimal movement for them to pound the nail into the wood board. And now we're going to go scientific management on what's the most optimal way for the knowledge workers to pound their fingers into the keyboard and make them have the right effect. I'm in.
Yes.
I wonder if it would work though, right? Because you have all these companies in the sort of early aughts in tech that went all wild on trying to figure out how to make teams more productive. And if I recall correctly, the only thing that Google found worked was just having a team that was highly productive in the first place. So it was like the people that you were surrounded by were the thing. So maybe it's just like really good screening, but it wouldn't actually produce that big of a delta for the participants.
But the reason I think that would work is, one, I would say my personal experience, like I definitely am a more productive person than I was 5 years ago. I think that like learning how to work is a real thing. The second thing I think is that if you look at different, there's been like studies around implementing like batching emails is like a very simple one. No meetings past certain times, like chunking deep work. Like there have been studies that show that this stuff is actually really useful in terms of generating like much better productivity outcomes. And I think that if you're Google, it's actually really hard to change the culture and information flows. And like, it's hard to change the culture of a company once you have like an unproductive company, which I think most companies are by default. I think it's much easier if the atomic unit is the person to like help them do their best work and put them in an environment that supports that. And I think that like very high performers would pay for that. It's sort of like a mid-range in my mind between I'm getting a co-working space and I'm hiring like a massively, an EA plus an executive coach to like sit next to me every day and help me do really high leverage shit.
You know, one thing that this actually like totally strikes another idea in this sort of same space is you could do this with, so one of the things that I find really fascinating is GPT-4 has already changed the world and it doesn't have vision released yet. Like they built vision, GPT-4 can see, and we just don't have access to those APIs or tools yet, which is totally mind-blowing if you think about it, given the impact that it's already had. But it's totally possible that you could build an agent that sits on your screen and watches you do stuff and gives you that type of real-time coaching. Because it'd be kind of weird to have a person sitting behind you and like breathing down your neck literally and telling you like, hey, batch your emails differently. But if you had a bot that was doing it, I bet you could train one to do that. Like, for example, another thing you can do is teach people keyboard shortcuts incrementally, like watch their mouse and them interacting with a piece of software. Every time they did something that could have been done better, like flash big in the top right corner of their screen, the keyboard shortcut they should have touched. That's another one of those sort of learning in the flow work things for productivity. I bet you totally could do it.
100% agree. It feels like such a no-brainer. Like if you're a company and you're like, okay, this person will touch the keyboard 15% faster, it's like you should throw money at that problem like every day, all the time.
It would also be satisfying as a person using it. You're like, wow, like look at how good I am at using this thing. Deeply satisfying.
Yeah.
I think these are some compelling ideas. We have a longer list. We'll come back for another episode at some point. But Justin, Sean, this was great. Great first episode. Thanks for coming on.
So fun.
Thanks for having me.